You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 184 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman number 58, Batman number 91, Justice League number 43, Jimmy Olsen number 9, Robin 80th anniversary 100 page super spectacular number 1, Batwoman season 1 episode 16 Through the Looking Glass, and Supergirl season 5 episode 16 Alex in Wonderland. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC News, Transcontinental Printing, the main Canadian printer of DC Comics and countless other publishers, is shutting down for 3 weeks until mid-April. Now, I've seen some other news come across that I didn't get down in my notes, that DC was doing other things to get their comics published and distributed. They're not using Diamond, because Diamond shut down also. And I can't remember which publisher I saw was doing it.
I'm a little bit surprised that I get why they would want to keep pushing, you know, getting their comics out, but I don't know that it's worth it. Who's going to go out and buy them for the most part? Yeah, right.
Of course I get all mine digitally.
Right, well, that's like, and I know for sure that they are still going to be publishing digitally, which that seems like the logical solution to me. Like, again, I get it. I know that they need to try and make money off of these comics, and I totally understand that. And I totally understand that a lot of people would rather have a physical copy. But, I mean, realistically right now, it just doesn't seem like a smart cost. It feels like it's going to end up costing them more money to do that than to just go digital for a little bit.
Yeah, because I know they're all their comics are returnable, so I know that.
Yeah.
And then I also... I think they're wanting to support the comic shops that are still open. There's some of them that are doing curbside services. I know they're not all comic stores are open, but there are some that are. So maybe that's another reason.
I do appreciate that reason. Like I said, I mean, I get it. I question. One thing I think both you and I worry about a lot is whether DC Comics and like either accidentally or something else from corporate happens where the company's at a point where they can't publish consistently anymore. And I'm worried that doing something like this will put them in a position later financially where all of a sudden we're talking about DC, you know, not being DC really.
Yeah, let's hope not.
I don't want to be doom and gloom. I don't want to necessarily say that that's likely to happen, but I just feel like it puts that at risk. I feel like they're sinking a cost into something that's not going to recoup itself. I don't know.
I
obviously hope that that's not the case. I definitely do not want that to be the case. I don't know. Digital seems like the most logical thing to do right now. I like I said, I very much appreciate trying to support local comic book stores. I just wonder how much that's going to ultimately help. I don't know. And maybe it helps a bit, and then in which case that's great.
Yeah. All right. We'll just have to keep our eye on things and see what happens.
Yeah, obviously, I would like the best for both DC and local, especially local comic book stores. I would like them to, you know, be able to keep going. And I understand, especially something like this, there, comic book stores, I feel like in general are always kind of living on the edge as it is. So
yeah,
I feel for them. And if it does, if finding a different publisher helps keep comic book stores open, and able to keep their head above water, that's great.
All right, up next for DC News, DC Comics announces daily live stream events featuring interviews and fan Q&As with creators starting, well, it says starting today. Whenever I put this in my notes, they were doing it at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, and the publisher will be holding daily live stream events on Instagram. DC Daily Live will feature interviews with creators like Dark Knights, death metal artist Greg Capullo, and Harley Quinn's Birds of Prey creators Jimmy Palomino and Amanda Connor, among others. Now, in addition to following the hour-long DC Daily Live, DC Universe subscribers will have the opportunity to attend live Q&A sessions with the featured creators by accessing through the streaming services community board. So it sounds like DC is trying to keep things, at least something for the fans to do.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I actually really like the idea, to be honest with you. It's kind of nice. I mean, one of the things that can't happen right now is cons, obviously.
Yes.
And one of the big advantages to going to those is being able to interact with creators in some way, whether you're personally interacting with them or, you know, going to a panel to see them talk. I think it's awesome. I think it's a very good idea.
Yeah, because it's basically like a digital panel.
Yeah, that's effectively free.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's clearly some benefits if you actually have DC Universe, but from my understanding, you don't even, like, you can still access most of this content anyways.
Yeah.
So I think it's an awesome idea.
All right, and for our next bit of news, because of the coronavirus, Wonder Woman 1984 has been moved to August 14th. Not surprising.
No, not at all. I do wonder if at some point, I mean, we don't know. Like, we have no idea how this is all going to play out. I wonder if we may end up seeing a digital release of it, like some of the other movies we're seeing.
That's what I was wondering too. But from what I've seen is they don't want to do that with Wonder Woman. So we'll see what happens.
And I get that. I mean, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be huge. And honestly, if you time it for when people are actually able to go back to theaters, I feel like a lot of people are going to want to go out and do stuff like that again. And so if you time it right around the start of that, and if it's as good as we hope it is, I mean, it could make some serious bank.
Oh, yes, for sure. All right. Well, now for our next bit of DC news. All of the CW DC shows are on hiatus. Originally, Batwoman and Supergirl was supposed to be on last night, and when I checked this morning, I was like disappointed it was reruns. So they are all officially on hiatus now, which is kind of a bummer. Now they did finally release. I saw it today. They finally said when we're going to start seeing new episodes. So on Tuesday, April 21st, we're going to get The Flash at 8 and Legends Tomorrow at 9. And then on Sunday, April 26th, Batwoman and Supergirl are supposed to have new episodes. Now, I haven't heard anything if the next week after that they're supposed to have episodes or whatnot, but at least this is something.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about in part, they clearly want to space out their content, but another, I don't know if we really addressed it, but another big issue they're going to need is time to finish their season. Most of these shows I haven't finished. We know for sure.
Yeah.
I think all of them. I mean, if
I don't think there any might of be, them finished.
Yeah, there might be one of them is done and I don't realize it, but I'm pretty sure all of them aren't done. And so they've got to, whenever they're able to, they've still got to get back and actually finish the season. So, I mean, even if they come back from this, the hiatus is giving them like about 3 weeks or so. But they've still got to finish the show. And I have no idea how many episodes they have left to film.
Right. And then you got Supergirl, Melissa Benoist. She's pregnant. So the longer you wait, the bigger her stomach's going to get.
Yeah, that's a great point. We talked about that they should probably be able to finish the season, no problem. But that that did not happen.
No, it did not.
No, wow. Really just appreciating how wrong I was about that statement now.
All right, and also with the CW shows, they're obviously going to be running reruns, but one of their announcements was they're going to be running Crisis on Infinite Earths again. So starting April 7th, Tuesday, April 7th, they're supposed to have part 1 at 8 p.m. and part 2 at 9 p.m. Wednesday, April 8th, they're supposed to be doing part 3 at 8 p.m. And then Thursday, April 9th, they're going to be doing part 4 at 8 p.m. and part 5 at 9 p.m. So if you want to rewatch Crisis that week, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea, especially being able to air it all at once for people that maybe, you know, had forgotten stuff from the first part, given the long break they had in between the start and conclusion of that miniseries. Yeah, I mean, why not, right?
Right. What else do you got to do?
Right.
And then there was an announcement that Stargirl was going to be coming out May 11th. That's changed. Stargirl is now coming out May 18th, and she's supposed to be moving into Flash's time slot, is what I read.
I don't totally get the week delay. Like, I understand the show getting delayed, but a week seems... I don't know.
From what I read from that article, it said Flash was supposed to be ending the week before, so they moved Stargirl to start the next week.
But will it, though? So that's the thing. I don't know. Do we know for sure Flash is going to end?
It's okay, then? Let me rephrase that. Flash, the last newest episode they have of Flash will be the week before.
Gotcha.
They don't know when Flash is going to end yet.
Man, that's going to be really interesting. I almost wonder if we're going to end up with these fragmented seasons.
Oh, I'm sure of it. Because they're not going to get production started back. I can't imagine it's going to get started back up anytime soon.
How? I mean, that's going to be so weird when you look back on it. I mean, we almost like just incomplete seasons.
Well, they're planning on finishing them up at some point. When they can.
I hope so. But I almost wonder at a certain point, like, at what point is too late and you need to actually start on the following season?
Well, from what I read, they're planning on finishing them, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, but plans have changed. I agree. I assume that they would try and finish them. I feel like we can't rule out the possibility that there is a reality there where it just gets too late and they don't finish the season either.
No, I think they'll finish the season. What'll end up happening is we'll have delayed premieres on the next seasons. That's what I think is going to happen.
Could be right about that. Which is crazy because they are... I always felt that CW premiered pretty late into what I would consider the start of a TV season.
Yeah, I agree with you, but... I wouldn't be surprised to see delayed premieres, honestly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The other thing I wanted to bring up about Stargirl is Geoff Johns wrote a personal letter to the, I don't know if you can't call them fans yet because nobody's seen it, but to the viewers who are going to be watching Stargirl. And I'm going to go ahead and read his first paragraph. You can check out the rest of the article on our Earth Station DCU Facebook group. Okay, this is what Johns wrote in his first paragraph. To everyone about to watch Stargirl, I know you have real-life concerns to deal with, as we all do. So if you are watching these, I hope it's to take a break from it, and I'd encourage you to watch Stargirl with your family. It's what the show was created for and what the show is about. And quite frankly, right now is the time to be with family. So that was his first paragraph. You can check out the rest of... what he wrote on our Earth Station DCU Facebook group.
And I do recommend it. I think it's really, I mean, it's obviously well written, and I don't know. I really appreciated his, you know, personal feelings on why that character means so much to him. If people don't know, he made that character and the story behind that. I thought it's good stuff.
It is. So I recommend checking that out also. All right. Well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
You left the crew from Earth Station Who with the Doctor in her prison cell and everyone else trapped in Chibnall Hell.
Never fear, the way is clear with the crew of Earth Station Who right here. We save the day in the best possible way by giving you all all new episodes.
We mean the good stuff. Classic stories, big finish, fan favorites too. Coming to you throughout the year with happy Hoovy and cheer.
And a smidge of super bonus Graham, so never fear.
You can find Earth Station Who wherever you listen to fine podcasts. Remember to tell all your friends.
Except for Ryan.
And leave feedback and subscribe. Earth Station Who is a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Aquaman number 58. So the issue opens up 10 months since the royal birth. Volko is given a secret mission from a hologram recording of Mira, and we don't get to hear what that secret mission is. So I'm intrigued by that. We're going to see that revealed, you know, as the story unfolds. After that, we see Aquaman is living in Amnesty Bay and is getting a lot of help raising his new daughter, Andy. Jackson, the old gods, and some local townspeople all helping raise his daughter, Andy. Now, I didn't know if you noticed, that's the same name that the old gods gave him when he was dead. Do you remember that, Cletus?
Yep.
Okay. And I'm sure that's where the name came from.
Yeah, I assume so.
Now, Mira is still in a coma, and we see Aquaman tries to visit her every day. And he kind of gives her an update on what is going on with their family. You know, basically what Andy's up to. Ocean Master is trying to gain favor with the common folk of Atlantis in the Ninth Tride. And we see he brings food and medicine in an attempt to gain followers to his cause. And we see Dolphin is among them who is recruited. And by the end of the issue, we see Aquaman returns from his visit with Mira, and he goes up to Andy's room to find out that she is missing. I thought this was a very intriguing first issue of this story arc.
I agree. I was very surprised by the eight-month jump. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily the wrong decision, but I'm hoping we get a little bit of filling in the gap when it comes to Ocean Master. Because obviously he was there in the last issue at the birth, and I'd be very curious to see, like, you know, what happened in between with him. Narratively, I like it because it kind of fast forward to a point where you can do some more interesting stuff with Aquaman's kid than having it just, you know, be just in the crib the whole time.
Yeah.
So I get it. I totally get it from that. I'm just hoping the only thing that I would like to see that we didn't get is kind of filling in the gap a little bit with Ocean Master. But otherwise, I really like this issue. I'm very intrigued to see where the story goes.
Yeah, and I'm kind of interested in Ocean Master's take because he's trying to play the savior card, but it's obvious he's trying just to get people to his cause. So, but it always helps when you throw food and medicine at the common people, you know it?
Yeah, it also felt very relevant. I don't know. It was one of those, I don't know how far in advance DeConnick wrote this issue, but man, when I was reading, I was like, "Whoo, relevant, man, that's relevant."
That's for sure. And like we saw a lot, like we read in the last issue, they had some sort of plague. I don't know if you want to call it a plague. They had some sort of thing like the coronavirus going on. So
yeah,
very interesting.
Yes, I'd like to admit that. I mean, that definitely played into my interest in the story, and so yeah, it feels like it's going to be. I don't know if it's intentionally timely or not. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and say that it is really interesting. I'm really curious to see where the story goes.
Me too. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Batman number 91. So I thought the Joker did a great job of recapping the designer's plans and what has happened so far.
The only thing I thought was weird with that is that they didn't do anything with him.
With the Joker?
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that too. They didn't really do anything with the Joker besides.
I did not mind the recap. I like you. I appreciated that. But then I thought they would do. Like, I thought maybe they would bookend the story with him, or something. And it was just almost just like a reminder. Like, just by the way, in case you forgot, the Joker's involved. I don't know. It was an odd way to include the character in a way that they didn't then go back. Like, it makes more sense if you come back to him at some point.
Hang on, I'm double checking. I thought they came back to him right at the end, but oh no, they didn't, did they?
No, I thought it was just Riddler. The designer. Oh well,
yeah, it was designer with the Riddler. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. They didn't come back to the Joker.
Huh. Again, I have no complaints with the being this. Like you said, the scene itself is a great recap. It was odd because it felt like it was supposed to be a bookend. That's how it read, and then when it wasn't, it was sort of like, well, wait, what? But anyway.
And we know Joker's going to factor into the story at some point. And maybe it's not his time to shine yet.
Right. Well, exactly. And I feel like maybe that's why he's there, is to just remind you that the Joker's there. So when he inevitably pops up at the end, it doesn't feel like it's out of the blue. But I don't know. Yeah. Could have done a little bit more with him, I thought.
So we see Batman is battling against Deathstroke in this episode. And until the designer terminates his contract... Deathstroke figures out he's not going to get paid, and suddenly Deathstroke is helping Batman. So we see Batman spends the whole time when he's battling Deathstroke, he's trying to convince him to join him. Took the double cross for Slade to quickly change his mind.
Which is, it's in character with certain interpretations of Slade. I have to say one thing with, there have been so much more, like because he's had such a surge in popularity, a lot of comics have been writing him, and I feel like that's consistent with one version of his character, but not necessarily consistent with, I think, other ones that we've read.
I have to agree with you on that.
And so it's tough. Like, I can't necessarily blame Tinian, because like, that's true for some of the stories that are being written with him, but also, I don't know, ultimately it felt like a waste of time. It was like, I just read 8 pages of exposition or whatever it was for ultimately nothing. Like, it was... served no purpose. I understand it was like his way essentially of explaining Bruce's motives, but Bruce has already done that. Like, we've already read why Bruce is trying to rebuild the city, so I didn't need to read that again, especially when it didn't do anything story-wise.
We also see Catwoman and Harley continue to work together, and Catwoman must blow up a building to foil part of the designer's plan, which ultimately I don't think changed anything. And she also tells Harley she's decided to steal the money of the rich before the designer does. So she wants to enact the designer's part of the plan that came from her before the designer does.
I feel like that's not going to work out.
Yeah. <Just saying. laughs> Yeah, I agree with you on that too. So.
One thing I thought was fascinating, and this is not a critique of the comic, it was on the cover, it was like also featuring Harley Quinn. I was like, are we really at a point where motivation to read a Batman comic is the inclusion of Harley Quinn? Like, that was crazy to me. And again, I'm not saying that as a criticism. I understand comic book covers, you know, do stuff like that, but it was just, it was one of those things, like, I feel like that's something you do with like a B or C list character. It's like, hey, featuring this A list character that we have, but you have the A list guy. It's Batman.
Yeah, but
you know, the selling point of the comic was Harley.
What they're trying to do is pull in people that don't normally read the title, and or Harley Quinn fans that don't read comics. Yeah, and they'll see that. Oh, because the movie just came out not too long ago.
Okay, but let me ask you this: if it's a Harley Quinn fan who doesn't read comics, are they going to pick this one up?
I don't know. I'm trying to give you reasons why they put it on.
I know. Again, I'm not criticizing it. It was just I was fascinated when I saw that. I was just like, oh, that's interesting. And not necessarily wrong. I mean, I get it. They did it for a reason. So
yeah. Well, let me rephrase that then. They're trying to bring in the reader that doesn't normally read Batman.
Yeah.
How's that?
Great. No, I understand that. It was fascinating to me. because that's not something I'm used to. I guess I'm not used to seeing with Batman covers as much, but maybe I just am not paying attention. I don't know.
Yeah, you probably weren't paying attention. What do you
think?
This
was fine. Overall, this issue, I thought it was fine. I'm intrigued by the designer. I always want to call him the architect. I don't know why. I'm intrigued by the designer. I can't help but feel like it's going to ultimately be kind of a hollow villain, though, because I feel like we're somewhat deeper into the story than we appear to be, if that makes sense. Like, I think we're closer to the finish line of this than you would think based on where we've reached in the story. I hope that's not the case, but I don't know. It feels like we're going to end up getting something of a hollow conclusion with him, because we've never gotten a lot of depth with him yet.
No, we haven't. And I think he's going to fade away, because next, it sounds like Riddler's up to something the next issue. And then I bet after that, it's going to be the Joker. So that's the feeling I get.
I hope that's not the case. And obviously I've not read the next issues, so they're not out yet, but I hope that that's not the case. I hope that we do get more interaction and depth with the designer, because I think he's an interesting villain. I would like more with him. I'm worried that he's basically just like a stepping stone to another Joker story, though.
Yeah, that's the vibe I get from it myself. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Justice League number 43. Without their powers, the Daxamites are easily defeated by the Justice League. The Eradicator sees that his elite force has failed and decides he must eradicate the Daxamites. And then we see the Justice League starts defending the Daxamites from the Eradicator. We see Superman offers his DNA to the Eradicator, but before he can finish, Wonder Woman cuts off his head, and he is disabled, at least for the moment. We see Jon Stewart calls in the Green Lantern Corps, who are more than happy to come pick up the Daxamite prisoners. And the Justice League bids farewell to Sodom Yat, who is returning to Daxam, to see if his people are willing to accept new leadership. And then in the last page, we see Batman ask Madame Xanadu to remain on the Justice League, but she refuses. She does tell Batman that when the Justice League has some great obstacle, she will help out on her own terms. And I have a feeling that we will be seeing her sometime in the near future, because we see she predicts some sort of obstacle that the Justice League has to overcome.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine how Venditti would escalate if a simple Eradicator fight is for the fate of the entire world. How do you escalate from there? Like, if the Joker and Lex Luthor team up, is it literally the like universe at risk at that? Like, I mean, it's just, I can't get over, even within this comic, it was so melodramatic. Everything happened too fast. There was not enough time to build up the stakes for the level of gravitas he was giving the entire thing. I mean, like, Flash was down, and then when Xanadu faints, Batman's like, Xanadu's lost. I thought he meant, like, we're losing, we've lost. And it was really just, like, just informing the team that she's out. And it was just all just, like, this extreme, like, oh, my God, we're literally, this is it. This is the last great epic Justice League story. And it was just the freaking Eradicator. Like, I don't know. There was never enough to this story. I'm not saying that you couldn't do a story where the Eradicator has this big epic, you know, story that is cataclysmic, but this was not it. And you definitely don't reach that point in four issues.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cletus Jacobs rant. I knew it was coming. Yeah, I agree with all your points. I mean, I can't argue anything. It was over the top.
It's just one of those things where it was. These are complaints that I've had with a lot of his stories. So this is not something that's unique to this specific Justice League story. This was my huge issue with a lot of his Green Lantern stuff, was that it was so focused on being over the top epic. Like, this was going to be like the next big comic that everybody references. Like, it's the next Nightfall. It's the next Death of Superman. A lot of his Green Lantern stuff read that way too. And none of that has come to pass. literally none of his run, as far as I'm aware, as I've seen, is considered like major must-read Green Lantern stories. And it's the same thing with this Justice League story. It's being written as if it's like 10 years from now, you and I talking about great Justice League stories, we're going to talk about the Eradicator invasion. And we're not. Like, this story is just going to fade into obscurity in like a month.
Yep. And lucky for us, Venditti's run on Justice League is short-lived.
Sometimes I feel bad that I always criticize him so much, but every time I read another one of his comics, I'm like, he just personally does not do it for me. And obviously that is subjective, but like every time I read another one, I'm like, oh, I really just don't like your stuff. Like, it's just that simple.
Which is one reason why we stopped reviewing The Flash.
Well, was he on the Flash? Yeah, he was on The Flash for a bit.
He's still on The Flash, isn't he?
No, that's Williamson.
Oh, it's Williamson. Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know whose stuff is worse.
I mean, you could apply a lot of my criticisms about Venditti to Williamson as well. It's the same thing where, like, all of those stories with The Flash are being written like they're the next big Flash saga, and none of them seem... I mean, somehow, amazingly, Bloodwork stuck. I don't know how. And ended up on the TV show. That is still baffling to me. But, I mean, apart from that, I mean, I guess Godspeed's probably going to stick around. But I feel like that's really... Let's be real. That's because the costume is really cool.
It is really cool.
It has almost nothing to do with Williamson's writing of the character.
Well, he made it on The Flash show briefly, but the costume looked awesome on screen, too.
Again, because of that character was not that character at all. Like, there was no character similarities between the live-action Godspeed and the comic Godspeed, apart from they both have that awesome costume. That's it.
Yeah.
And the name. I mean, obviously, it's a great name, too. I got to give him credit there.
Yeah, it is.
I honestly, the artist, I don't remember who the artist was that designed the Godspeed, but they're the one that deserve credit for that character, in my opinion, not Williamson. We're not even talking about The Flash.
I know. We got off on a tangent.
Glad to see this Justice League arc done. I mean, it was fine. Honestly, it wasn't terrible. It's not the worst thing I've ever read, but I was so bothered by the fact that it was a mediocre Justice League story being presented to me as if it was like Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. That's what it felt like. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Jimmy Olsen number 9. The Lil Olsens are back. And we got three different stories in this issue of the Lil Olsens. We had Julian giving his investment advice, which reminded me of Lucy from the Peanuts and her psychiatrist advice. We had another one where Jimmy tries to steal money from his brother's room to help his sisters play. And then we had the one where Jimmy couldn't pay attention to his dad talking about their trust. All of them were funny.
I thought they were all really funny, but they also very much served their purpose, because by the time I finished reading the third one, I was starting to be like, are we sure the brother isn't the one that's got it out for Jimmy? And then sure enough, by the end of the comic, we got to that. So I mean, they were very enjoyable in their own right, just as like homages to, you know, Peanuts. But also in terms of like hinting at the reveal, was I thought they did a very good job with that, too.
Yeah. We got another weird story about the Kanderland and the Falloff family. That was just a weird story. And we got another story about the poor Cadillo. He gets his headshots from Jimmy. I thought that was freaking hilarious.
And his Crocs, just all of it. It was just so funny. Like, those are the sort of ridiculous things that you get when you get a Matt Fraction comic, man. That was just absurd. I loved it.
and then we get to the final story. Like you said, we got the reveal. It was casino night for the PTA at the local school, and Jimmy goes there and ends up playing against Lex Luthor, loses all his tickets, and then we see Luthor pulls him aside and tells him that his brother Julian is trying to kill him.
What kills me too is just like, is it was like the comic draws attention to the fact that they're trying to parody James Bond, and yet it's at a PTO. And they're playing Baccarat, like the classic Bond films with PTO tickets.
I know. Like,
with raffle tickets, and Lex Luthor is inexplicably there. Just the whole thing. It was just amazing. It was just so, like, perfectly absurd.
Man, we only got like three issues left of this comic, or this miniseries, and I'm going to miss it when it's gone.
I know. I'm hoping that he's got in some, I don't know if his agreement was specifically just for this comic, but I'm hoping that he's got a deal where he basically just writes a miniseries at a time for them. Because I know for a fact that he is so heavily involved in his own projects for Image, which, I mean, makes sense. Those are his actual comics.
Right.
But I hope that he does do another miniseries for DC, just because it's so good. And I think it's so well suited to what I think DC needs to do with a lot of their other characters, is to just do miniseries like this. I mean, not necessarily exactly like Fraction, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
These are the kind of books that I think DC needs to focus on putting out, are these self-contained stories.
And we've been seeing a lot more miniseries coming from DC. So maybe that's the trend they're moving to.
One thing I think that they're doing a really great job with is this is how they're getting some of their better writers, to be honest with you. Like, you're not going to convince Matt Fraction at this point in his career, I don't think, to, unless you pay him an ungodly amount of money, to do a lot of ongoing series for you, right? Because he doesn't need to do that. He has his own stuff that he would rather have control over.
Right.
And I get that. But you can convince him to do a mini series, right? Because that gives him more the creative control that I'm sure he wants. And it's also not as much commitment. And like, we're seeing that, like, they're letting King do that. Snyder's done several miniseries in addition to his ongoing that he was doing with Justice League. But I feel like this is how you keep a lot of your better writers, because this is, I mean, obviously once upon a time, the best writers worked their way up to Marvel and DC, right?
Right.
And that was how they got their status, but that's not really the case anymore. A lot of the times you kind of get your start at one of those two. And then once you're big enough, you move on, whether it's Image or somebody else, but you move on to doing your own comics that you own. And I think I am of the opinion that these sort of miniseries that require less commitment is how you keep a big name on. Obviously throwing money at them also helps, but you know what I mean? Like, you're not asking them to sit down and write 100 issues of Batman. You're just asking them to write 12 issues of Jimmy Olsen. I think that there's a certain appeal there, because they can do that, but not necessarily have to sacrifice focus on their own projects.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, and for our last issue this week, Robin, 80th anniversary, 100-page super spectacular. Honestly, this comic was just like any other of those 100-page super spectaculars. I didn't find it that spectacular. I don't know about you, Cletus.
No, honestly, the one thing I did appreciate, what I thought was interesting, is that they tried to do basically a story for each iteration of the, clearly a story for each of the Robins, but also they also tried to do some for each of the Nightwing, Dick Grayson specifically, each of his different kind of eras, which let's mention that they excluded Rick Grayson.
So. Thank God.
Well, yes, but you know what I mean? Like, again, just reinforcing the fact that story is ultimately, you know, not going to be remembered.
Right.
I mean, some of them I enjoyed some. Like, I liked King's. I think that one probably lands better if you read any of his Spiral run when he was, you know. So if people don't know what that's from, so in the New 52, Dick Grayson has... Dick Grayson's had some bad luck recently. So before the whole Rick Grayson debacle, he was, during the Forever Evil storyline, his character's identity is, like, his identity is revealed to the world, and he appears to die. And so Batman decides the safest thing is to roll with that. So the world thinks that Dick Grayson is dead. He can't be Nightwing anymore. And so he becomes a secret agent. And it went on for a while. And that was, I think, one of King's earlier things he did for DC. It's pretty good, and I liked the story that we got from it. Honestly, it was probably my favorite of the stuff that I read. But yeah, a lot of them were just sort of, they were fine. They were just, you know, they were sort of mini stories that just featured. I think they probably were good if you really liked that Robin, and if you, you know, were only interested in reading a good story, you're going to be pretty disappointed.
Yeah. Now, I like the Agent 37 one. Also, I was surprised. I didn't think I'd be interested in it because I'm not really interested in Dick Grayson as a spy. But I did like that story. I think my favorite story was the Marv Wolfman one, only because it felt like old school Batman.
And it worked. And I think in that case it worked because it was kind of supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
I think in that case it worked as opposed to some of the other Wolfman stuff that we've seen recently, because it was sort of the point. Like his writing style fit because it felt like it was like that was the era that story was from. That one wasn't bad. I liked the Jason Todd one. Wasn't too bad. I mean, it was a pretty simple story. I was surprised that was all they did with him, though, to be honest with you. Like, yeah. A lot, like Dick Grayson got, what, 3 or 4 stories?
Yeah.
Tim Drake got 2, which I mean, that makes sense. Tim Drake was Robin for a pretty significant chunk of time, but Jason Todd got 1, and it was probably the shortest story. That was surprising to me.
Yeah. Going into this one, the one I was looking most forward to was Chuck Dixon, because I really liked him as a writer back in the day, but his story was about the Cataclysm. I was like, really? I mean, it was an okay story, but it's not what I was expecting from him. I was actually expecting him to be writing one of the Tim Drake stories, and was surprised he wasn't, because he was one of the major writers for Tim Drake back in the day, so that I thought that was odd. I did like Tomasi's Super Sun story, because I always like reading the Super Suns. They're fun. And I also thought the Damian Wayne story was interesting, only because it got me intrigued with what he's doing in Teen Titans right now. Apparently he's mind-wiping the criminals they're capturing. Thought that was interesting, and he obviously didn't want Batman to find out about it.
I found that comic, I was intrigued by, like you, I was intrigued by what Damian was doing, but I was also a little, like, how, I don't know, I can't totally buy that Batman would be that clueless as to Damian being up to something.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like, normally I would get it, because Damian is obviously very intelligent and very clever, but, like, it's Batman, right?
Right.
it's Batman, he should understand that something is up.
And you would think he'd be keeping tabs on Damian.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was a little bit odd. But yeah, I was glad that they did a Stephanie Brown story. Honestly, I was a little surprised. I thought that they might just ignore that she was a Robin. I wasn't a huge fan of her story, though. I could have done without half the focus of the story was that her boobs didn't fit in the costume.
Yeah, that was...
Come on, are you kidding me? Really?
You know what's funny? That was written by a woman, too.
I was shocked by that. I'm not going to lie. Because when I read that, I immediately, like, skipped ahead to see who had written the story. Because I was like, oh, no. And then I saw it was written by a woman. I was like, wow. Okay. I guess I can't really – I don't have a place to talk. But, man, I really would have thought – I mean, she's the – what I think the shortest-termed Robin, right?
Yes.
I think.
Yep.
And so I would have liked some sort of story, maybe trying to appreciate her time as Robin instead. I mean, I guess it was trying to do that. But we had half of the comic focusing on her costume ripping. It just, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just, come on, really?
Yeah. And one thing I didn't like, it didn't explain why she had replaced Tim briefly. I didn't see anything in here that said why she would replace Tim briefly. I don't remember.
Whatever. It was weird because it felt a lot like a setup to a story that's never going to be told.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the other ones felt like somewhat self-contained stories. And it was to a certain extent, but it really felt like a chapter one. But it's like, but that story's not going to be told. I mean, I guess it was told, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. That one bummed me out a little bit. Not necessarily because she's my favorite Robin or anything, but it was... Like, that's a chance to actually, I don't know, help people appreciate that character. I don't think they succeeded.
Nope. One thing I really liked was at the end of this comic where they kind of give you descriptions of the different Robins and kind of what's happened. You know, it's brief, but it's interesting. And, of course, Stephanie's was the shortest one.
Right. And I get that. Like I said, I get that. And I don't think necessarily she should have had more than one comic or anything, but I could have. It's just, it's disappointing to me, I think, because I think there could have been a different story told for her, especially when you're doing four stories with Dick Grayson.
Right. But I am glad they acknowledged a Robin anniversary, because he is one of my favorite characters, especially the Tim Drake version.
One thing I hope that we see, and I'm assuming Tinian's run's going to go for a while, that's what it seems like. I'm hoping we see him incorporate Robin's in. I felt like King did a pretty good job of regularly incorporating the family. Obviously, it wasn't, you know, all the time, but I felt like very consistently they were a real presence in the story.
We had some fun issues, like when Bruce took him to that Batman-themed restaurant. I really liked that issue.
Well, you know what I mean? I think he did. I think King did a pretty good job of sort of continuing on the idea of the Bat family and the fact that, like, a significant part of Batman's history is having a Robin with him. Despite, I would say, the last two decades, most Batman comics have been mainly just solo Batman stuff. I felt like King did a pretty good job of incorporating the family. I'm hoping Tinian does the same in his run, although based on what we saw in, was it Detective Comics? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We'll see. I'm hopeful for him, especially on his Justice League Dark run has been great. I hope he brings some of that over to his Batman run. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Hey, weird podcast people! Join us every week on the Flopcast for a half hour or so of silly conversation about comics, music, Saturday morning cartoons, old movies and TV shows, and chickens. It'll be our little secret. Find us at flopcast.net and on the ESO network.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman, Season 1, Episode 16, Through the Looking Glass. Kate must deal with the repercussions of killing Cartwright last episode. Just like we talked about last week, we see Alice trying to make Kate more like her. Alice convinces Kate to help her break Mouse out of Arkham. And when they reach Mouse, Kate locks her sister in the cell, and Jacob shows up. Kate does the right thing in the end, and it felt like it was the last straw for Alice. I think she's going to be giving up trying to turn her sister into her.
Yeah, I think this is going to be, they kept kind of flirting with her not being the villain. And we do, I mean, there is some, we clearly saw in this episode, there is some other villain out there that's got it in for Alice. And I'm sure the collateral of that will, you know, affect Batwoman as well. But I agree with you. I feel like this is sort of a turning point where we see her kind of solidify herself as what we assume still to be the end boss, so to speak, of the season.
Yep. We also see that Luke finds out his father's killer has a court date for an appeal. And the killer wins the appeal, and the prosecution has a chance to retry him, but the killer is going a free man. And when Luke goes to confront his father's killer, an assassin shoots him down. Obviously, something more is going on, and Lucius Fox's killer is still on the loose. We also see Sophie is the target of an assassin. And luckily, Julia Pennyworth finds out about it and is able to save Sophie. And when she finds out about Luke, we see her rush off to see how he is doing. It was kind of great to see Julia return. I like that character from when we saw her earlier in the season.
I did too. I have to admit, it felt a little out of the blue. It took me a second to be like, is this the show I know you from? Because for a second I was like, you're not from Gotham, right? And then I was like, oh, no, we did see her. So, and that's not necessarily the show's fault. It was so abrupt. I was like, wait, I know you, and I can't remember why. But I agree. I do like the character. And it seems like maybe she's going to be around for a few episodes.
I hope so. I like her character. And I knew who she was right away when I saw her.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not blaming the show for that. That was me. I was like, I recognized her, but I couldn't remember if I was remembering her correctly from Batwoman or not.
We also see Jacob Kane is also targeted by an assassin. And we see Jacob is able to stop his attacker, but the assassin dies before Jacob can learn any more. I'm very curious who the mystery benefactor is who hired the assassin.
One thing I wonder is, are we going to see that coalesce? Are we going to see the Alice story and this coalesce into one, where whoever this mysterious person that is threatening Alice is also the person behind Lucius Fox's murder and cover up beyond that? I wonder. I mean, because otherwise you've got two intriguing, especially the cover up storylines. I would imagine that they're going to bring them together at some point.
Yeah, that's what the feeling I have is too. It's all going to tie up together.
I have to say, I'm really enjoying the whole, you know, cover up and trying to figure out what actually happened story. Frankly, a lot more than the, you know, another version of Kate struggling with the fact that her sister is Alice.
Yeah.
For the 16th time this season.
I know. It's time to move on to something different, isn't it?
But we know, but they won't. The problem is that they won't. Like, this is going to at least go on for this entire season.
Yeah.
And, like, I get it. But at a certain, like, it's frustrating because it's, like, one step forward, two steps back. Like, she takes a step forward and then, like, you know, like, resolves, like, I can't help her. And then she interacts with her again, like, oh, I can help her. Oh, I can't help her. No, I can't help her. No, I can't help her. And it's just like, I understand they're sisters, and that's a hard bond to really, truly break from. But, like, as a viewer, I'm just, like, I've seen it. And I've seen it 16 times now.
We've seen this problem before with Arrow, and we've seen the problem before with Flash. They don't break up their season into story arcs. Black Lightning is a great example of breaking things up.
Well, and also Black Lightning's season is short enough that they don't have that issue nearly as much.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I mean, I have to say what's interesting is that they are sort of doing new storylines in a way that I feel like Flash and Arrow didn't necessarily do. But still, it's weird. They're, like, doing both, if that makes sense. Like, they're introducing new plots that are interesting, but they're not letting go of the other one.
Yeah, and I think that's probably its problem.
I agree, because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like the whole cover-up thing is really interesting, and it's kind of being lost in, you know, yet another Alice story. And I think that's sort of a shame. I know, I'm sure that they're going to tie the two together, and that's fine. But in the meantime, there's this really intriguing mystery that multiple parties are figuring out what feels like very relevant information, and nobody's sharing it because the show's too focused on something else.
Right. But this episode also took those two distractions, Alice and Mouse, out of the picture if they want to. They're locked up in Arkham right now. They could leave them out for a few episodes and we could focus on this. We'll see if they do that. Well, we won't be seeing it for quite a while.
Yeah.
Till next month.
I got to agree with you in your summary. You said that, you know, Kate ultimately does the right thing by committing her sister to Arkham. I got to say, though, knowing that was her plan the whole time, did she need to stab a guard in the leg? What did that poor guy do? You know what I mean? It was like, I understand the whole, you know, tricking your sister into thinking you're helping her and then ultimately locking her in there, too. I get that. But, like, it couldn't have, it seemed like she was coordinating with her dad, too, right?
Right.
And so, if you're coordinating with the dad, why not have the dad be like, look, we're going to have people look like they're breaking in. Just pull your guards out away. We've got it. Like, we've got a perimeter set up, right?
Right.
Something where you reveal this to us later, after, you know, like, after you've got Alice committed, you find out that they actually had the place surrounded the whole time. And so, you just tell the warden, like, hey, keep your guys out of the way. And then nobody gets stabbed in the leg for no reason.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
it's just, it's hard to, I feel like there's sometimes there's some things that they've done with Batwoman where it's like, because they're insistent on her not moving on from her sister, which I get, they've had her do some really morally questionable things, not even ignoring the murder, other things that the show isn't calling attention to, like that, or like the other times that she's helped her sister escape or, you know, not arrest her sister. Think like those small things that the show basically is ignoring, that those could possibly be a negative thing or have negative consequences. It's just that to me gets a little frustrating. For I mean, Batwoman, frankly, at this point, is an accomplice to all of the stuff that she's done.
Yeah, honestly, she is.
And I don't know that the I can't tell if the show also thinks that or not. It kind of feels like they don't. It kind of feels like they're still continuing to just place the blame on Alice's masterminding when it's like, yeah, but I mean, that legally doesn't absolve Batwoman from all of these things that she's done. She's beaten up law enforcement far more often than she's needed to.
Yep.
And I understand that is part of Batman. Batman does get into conflict with law enforcement. I get that. But like, there have been some times where it's been like she's doing it for the sake of a serial killer, not for the sake of like stopping a serial killer. That makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Supergirl, Season 5, Episode 16, Alex in Wonderland. Jeremiah Danvers is dead. Honestly, Cletus, I didn't know he was alive. Apparently, he died of a cardiac arrest in the Peruvian Andes, performing humanitarian work at a refugee center for displaced aliens. It sounds ridiculous, me just reading it.
I mean, clearly they just decided that they weren't going to get Dean Cain back, right?
Yeah.
And decided to do this story. I got to say, though, I mean, it's like you said, it's been so long and it came so out of the blue. I feel like they needed to have done something a couple episodes before, just like two or three throwaway lines, right? To remind
something.
You. Right? Because like when they pulled, especially when they pulled Cyborg Superman back, I know that it was supposed to be like intentionally melodramatic because she was in a video game,
right,
so to speak. But oh my God, what a reminder of how terrible that was.
Yes. I was so happy he did not put on that stupid.
Oh, but even without it, it was still awful. I know part of it was intentionally over the top. All of them were acting like, you know, caricatures, but like that was him acting as a caricature of a bad version of that character was just terrible. Whew. I mean, that was, I can easily say I do not need to get Cyborg Superman back on the show anytime soon.
No. All right. Well, Kara seems to be at peace that Jeremiah Danvers was a good man. Alex is clearly not and refuses to go back to Midvale for his funeral. Alex is angry with her father for never making amends for being absent in her life. And she also feels like her relationship with him was forever changed by his obsession with keeping Kara safe. We see Alex use the obsidian platinum lenses to escape the real world for a while. And she chooses to be Supergirl and quickly becomes engrossed into the VR world. When she's in there, she's seeing other people, other characters that she's talking to forget, you know, she learned some stuff about their real life. And then when she comes back to them again later in the game, they don't remember her or remember being back in the real world. And then we get to this point where Alex forgets that she was in the real world. We even see that scene where she wakes up and takes off the contact lenses, but she's actually still in the virtual reality world. It was interesting to me because I've had dreams where I've woken up in my dream and thought I was awake, but I really wasn't. So that kind of intrigued me.
Yeah, I that was pretty interesting, the fake out of her waking up. The only thing that I'd say with this that I thought was a little inconsistent was the messaging the show was giving in terms of how many people were affected by this bug. Because you have in the real world, you have her girlfriend and the journalist are talking, and it's like a very small percentage, right?
Right.
Like there's only of the what I believe, thousands of users, right?
Right.
My interpretation of the thousands of users, there's only like 400 or so that have been stuck in it for more than 48 hours, which is a lot. So, okay, so there's 400. But of those 400, only like, what was it, 100 or less were unaccounted for? So at less than 100 of thousands of users, and yet we see Alex and all but one character she interacts with all get affected by it. And like, I would have liked to have seen more non-affected users. Like, if you, I'm just saying, like, in the sense that if you go from Alex's perspective of the story, every single person that puts those contact lenses on is going to get taken over by them. And I'm sure that they will at some point, right? I'm right. sure that's what the story is hinting at. But what it's showing is that every single person that puts it on that we see in this episode gets affected by it. But then this episode is also telling us that statistically that's not the case. And so we somehow like saw the statistic anomaly, all of them bunched together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. So, they did it. They did it for story perspective.
Well, I totally get her interacting with a couple other people that are stuck in it. I get that. I totally get that. But they only show it. We only see the one. The other Supergirl is the only one we see that is not stuck in it. Right. I would have right. liked to have seen more. I don't know, people in it, I guess, her interact with other users. I don't know. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but it was, to me, it was inconsistent because I was like, wait, this is making it seem like every, if you put the lenses on, you're stuck. But then you're telling me that that's mathematically not the case.
And I think you're looking too far in depth in it.
I will agree. I mean, I agree, but I don't know. It's also not, I think it's an easy thing to, I don't know. I think it's an easy flaw to not overlook.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but ultimately, I don't really care.
Yeah, no, I know. I know. It's not that big a deal. I've had bigger criticisms of the show, so.
Yes, you have.
I like the whole, I mean, honestly, the general idea of having her, you know, Alex be Supergirl for an episode was pretty cool, to be honest with you. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm also interested in seeing other people investigate it besides Supergirl and the DEO. Getting a girlfriend kind of looking into it, I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I also liked Kelly and William teaming up. So, you know, they're kind of investigating the 32 satellites Lex rushed through to get put in orbit.
Yeah.
So that was interesting too.
Do you think William's going to stick around?
I don't know. I don't know if he's going to stick around past this season.
I can't tell. It just, part of me thinks that he would because it feels like they're trying to set him. Obviously, they're clearly trying to set him up as a love interest. But like, are they just going to keep doing the same thing every season? It's just a different person for.
I don't know. And they might.
There's nothing wrong. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just fascinating because it sticks out. Supergirl, compared to almost all the other CW shows, sticks out like a sore thumb in regards to an inconsistent love interest. Right.
Right.
I mean, like Flash very quickly settled on Iris. Oliver pretty quickly became all about Felicity.
Yep.
Black Lightning obviously has his wife. I mean, as of now, Batwoman is clearly very focused on her ex. Whether that lasts or not, we don't know.
Right.
But Supergirl's been, it looked like it was going to be James Olsen. Then they just decided, nah.
Then we had Mon-El. That was probably the longest one.
And that one was weirdly like a mixed reaction among the fan base, which I've always found fascinating because I really, I don't know. I mean, because I'm a guy, I guess. I don't know. I like this character. But he was clearly, and they even hinted at it in the anniversary episode, that he was controversial at best as a love interest. So now we're on William. And like you said, like I can't tell if he's actually going to stick around or not. So if he doesn't, then I don't know. I don't know. It's just there's not necessarily anything wrong with it. I'm just it's surprising given the very consistent trend among all of the other superhero shows that the Berlantiverse has done.
Yeah, honestly, I don't feel like William's the one for her anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that either. It's interesting to me because it felt like they were trying to set that up twice and did, for whatever reason, didn't do it with James Olsen. That's for reasons I still don't fully understand. And then they clearly moved away from Mon-El, you know, because it was not universally popular amongst the fan base.
Well,
which is funny because the actors themselves clearly hit it off.
Yeah, because they're married and have a kid on the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, the actors themselves clearly bought into the chemistry, but apparently the fan base didn't.
One of the last things I want to talk about, Eve Tessmacher is back. And she's working for Obsidian, but I don't know if she's working with Lex or she's working with Leviathan because of what we saw at the end of last season.
She's not Eve Tessmacher anymore. It's the AI thing that
Lena's AI thing.
Unless something got reset in Crisis. That has not been, unless they haven't technically established that. But remember, we saw her this season, right? Get like captured, so to speak, by Lena, and ultimately, like, Lena overwrote her brain.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
So I assume that she's working for Lena / Lex, but I don't know. Obviously, that could have changed based on Crisis. There could be, you know, she could just be a Leviathan agent again.
Yeah.
I would say those are the two options. She's either the computer program, which I think is the most likely thing, because they would definitely need to clarify that changed due to Crisis. Otherwise, Crisis would have happened, and I assume in that case she'd be a Leviathan agent.
We'll have to wait until next month to find out.
I would think, I'm still inclined to think that she's still Lena's AI, because I would think if she was Leviathan, that, what's the CEO's name?
Oh, shoot, I can't remember what it.
I would think she would know, yeah. Right? Because she's also Leviathan, so I would assume that she would know. So my guess is that she is still the AI. Would be, and like I said, if that's not the case, it would have had to have been a Crisis change.
All right, well, only time will tell, and we got plenty of that before we get shows back on.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so I was trying to think of some DC comics that might be relevant for what we're dealing with at the moment. And I thought one kind of recent comic during Geoff Johns' Justice League run during the New 52, right after Forever Evil, within that story, Lex Luthor is sort of the hero of the story as it goes along. At the conclusion of that, he joins the Justice League. And in the volume that follows that, once Forever Evil is over and the Justice League starts being its own book again, they fight Amazo. Ultimately, you see like an actual version of Amazo, but it's a virus and it affects Metas. And it's like the entire league is having a hard time stopping its spread. And it's a really interesting take on Amazo. And I think it's an interesting and potentially relevant story. So that volume is volume 6. The subtitle is Justice League Injustice League. And again, it's volume 6 of his New 52 Justice League run.
All right. And for my shout out, if you're a fan of Robin, and since it's the Robin 80th anniversary, I'm going to shout out about there was a Robin series featuring Tim Drake back in the 90s that I really like that run. And that's going to be my shout out. You got plenty of time since you're stuck at home. Take some time and check that out. All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we got Action Comics, Detective Comics, Far Sector, Justice League Dark, Wonder Woman, and the final issue of Batman Curse of the White Knight. Unfortunately, we have no CW shows next week, so it's going to be an all-comics episode with some DC news, hopefully. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
increase the power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.